It was almost 39 years ago that Travis Walton, then an American logger, was abducted by a UFO while working with a logging crew in Arizona. Walton could not be found, but reappeared after a five-day search. In a moment, Travis Walton joins us on this special anniversary date to recall what happened to him a long time ago. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. What an amazing story. I don't know how many of you saw the story, Fire in the Sky. It's an incredible movie about the life of Travis Walton. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Travis. On November 5th, 1975, a group of loggers in the mountains of northeastern Arizona observed a very strange, unusually bright light in the sky. Now, one of those men, Travis Walton, recklessly, they say, left the safety of his truck to take a closer look. Now, when Travis failed to reappear, the men were suspected of murder. They actually thought that his friends, his buddies, killed him. Now, for 5 days, authorities mounted a massive manhunt in search of Walton, and Walton eventually reappeared, extremely disoriented, and initially unable to tell the details of his terrifying encounter. His book, Fire in the Sky, provides an account of this experience, and of course, as I mentioned, was turned into a movie. We have had UFO researchers on the program, Jenny Randles, for sure, and this is one of their quotes. Neither before or since has an abduction story began in the matter related by Walton and his co-workers. Furthermore, the Walton case is singular in that the victim vanished for days on end with police squads out searching. An incredible story, close encounters of the third kind. I mean, truly a remarkable story. Now, the Walton case received mainstream publicity, and it remains one of the best-known instances of alien abduction cases. There's a UFO historian. His name is Jerome Clark. He writes that few abduction reports have generated as much controversy as this situation as well. And one of the few abduction cases where the time allegedly spent in the custody of aliens plays a rather minor role in this overall account. I'm going to relay a little bit of what happened. I'm trying to set the stage for you and for Travis Walton. Just after 6 p.m. on November 5th, Rogers and his crew finished their work for the day, and they piled into Rogers' truck. That was his name. It's one of their loggers, one of his friends. The crew reported that shortly after beginning the drive home, they saw a bright yellowish light from behind a hill. They drove closer. They said they saw a large golden disc hovering above a clearing and shining brightly. It hovered below the tops of the trees, maybe 15 feet over a pile of logging slash. It was around 8 feet high, 20 feet in diameter, one of those classic size looks. Rogers stopped the truck, and Travis Walton, of course, jumped out. If you saw the movie, you saw part of what happened to him. He ran toward the disc. The others, they shouted at him, "Come back. What are you doing? Are you nuts?" I said some other things I can't repeat on the radio. The men in the truck reported that Walton was nearly below the object when that dish and that disc began making noises similar to a loud turbine. The disc then began to wobble from side to side, and Travis Walton cautiously walked away from the object. Now, they continue to say that Walton moved away from the disc. The others insisted that they saw a beam of blue-green light coming from the disc that struck him. One of the other loggers went on to say that it looked like Walton rose a foot into the air. His arms and legs were outstretched. A shot back some 10 feet, all while caught in the glow of his light. His right shoulder hit the earth, and his body sprawled all over the ground. At 7:30 p.m., one of the others called police from Arizona. Deputy Sheriff Chuck Ellison answered the telephone. It was reported that only one of a logging crew was missing. And then the deputy sheriff, met the crew at a shopping center, and they related the tale to him. All the men seemed distraught. Two of them were in tears. And though he was somewhat skeptical of this account, the sheriff deputy Ellison would later reflect that if they were acting, they were awfully good at it. Ellison notified his superior, Sheriff Martin Gillespie, at the time. Now, keep in mind, this is back, way back, 1975. The sheriff told Ellison, the deputy, to keep the crew until he could arrive with another officer to interview the men. Now, in less than an hour, the sheriff and another officer arrived, and they heard the tale from the crew. Same thing. Stories never changed. They then insisted on returning to the scene immediately to search for Walton with tracking dogs, if possible. No dogs were available, but police and some of the crew returned to the scene. Crew members were too upset to be much help in the search, so they elected to return and relay the bad news to friends and family. At the scene, the law enforcement officers became suspicious of the story related by the crew, mainly because there was nothing in the way of physical evidence to back up the account. Though more police and volunteers arrived in the search, they found not a trace of Walton. Winter nights could be bitterly cold in the mountains. What the heck happened to Travis Walton? So that's the stage. That's what happened to that point. Let's now go live to Travis Walton and pick up the story from when he was zapped by this object. Travis, welcome back to Coast, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing fine. It's great to be with you again.
You too, Travis. I'm looking forward to seeing you at some various events and things around the country. But from that moment when you got hit by that beam, what happened?
Well, I just felt this numbing shock go through my body. And, you know, when I regained consciousness, I came back kind of slow. It was really very painful, and it felt like I was suffocating. It was just hard to breathe. I was disoriented, didn't know where I was, and I visibly remembered that I approached the UFO, but I thought I'd been hurt somehow and taken to a hospital. So I just thought I was in a hospital. Next, I heard the sounds of movement around me. I just thought these were, you know, doctors and nurses and stuff. But when I finally could focus my eyes and see that these were not people, it was just an incredible shock. It sent a shot of adrenaline through me that gave me the strength to roll off the table away from them. And they had this thing across my chest that fell off on the floor there, and they came around the table towards me, and it was just kind of a standoff where I was just swinging at them to keep them away from me. But the three of them stood there just staring at me in a way that was excruciating. It was almost painful because it seemed like they were just looking into me.
Could you, Travis, at the time when you were there, could you witness any emotion from these beings? And then, of course, I'm going to have you describe what they look like. But did they show you any emotion at all?
No, and, you know, it's only human nature that when we see unemotionalness, we kind of interpret that as hostility. But if they didn't really have much in the way of expression. Although their faces weren't like frozen, it wasn't like they were incapable of moving them. They just didn't seem to really register anything I recognized as an emotion.
What did they look like, Travis? To kind of describe them for us.
Well, they were very small, but, you know, that didn't lessen the fear, you know.
Oh, no.
Strange to look into the eyes of a creature with a consciousness, if you've ever looked into the eyes of apes at the zoo, you know,
that's
it's
right.
Kind of like that. It's different than looking into the eyes of any other animal. And it was just a weird kind of a feeling. But their eyes were huge. And, I think, you know, where they came from, it must be some kind of a low-light condition, because every animal on Earth that has large eyes like that, lives in a cave or under the deep sea or at night or something, you know?
Were they the classic alien grays, Travis?
Well, they didn't have that terminology back then, but actually, you know, I believe that a lot of what people call grays today is they're describing several different species that just happen to be similar in appearance.
Yeah. Could you see any kind of technology in terms of operational control of the craft? Could you see a pilot? Could you see any instruments like that beyond
well,
what they were doing to you?
It was surprisingly minimal or surprisingly simple. There were buttons, a screen. Now, we didn't have touch screen back in those days, so I didn't even think to touch the screen. But, you know, a lever just, and this could have been, you know, what we actually controlled the ship, or it might have been just something that was controlling this, like, viewing room, or planetarium-like place.
Because your visit there, you know, you're with your logging friends. This was kind of random. I mean, this wasn't like they were seeking you out. You're the one who got out of the truck and went running out toward them. Once they what do you think they wanted to do with you? I mean, why did they pull you up there?
Well, you know, for a long time, you know, I accepted the term abduction, but in hindsight, I think that they were really just forced to take me aboard to revive me. I was foolish enough to get so close and get myself hurt that at that point, that, you know, I would have been dead had they just left me laying there. The nearest hospital was over an hour away. And if it was just something as minor, as cardiac arrest, you know, 46 minutes and it's permanent, you know.
Well, that's a good point. And your friends left you there, did they not?
Yeah, they did. But, you know, in the movie, it looks like much less violent than it actually was. That blast of energy was so powerful that the crew was yelling at each other, "It killed him, he's dead." Immediately, they said that they just knew I was dead. So,
yeah,
you know, people that think that they were being less than heroic, there was no point in getting themselves killed to save somebody they just thought got killed. Now, when they were got up the road, they said they were arguing about whether it had blown me to pieces or burned me up. And you know, Ken, one of the crewmen, said that on the way back, he was less afraid about them coming back, you know, because they'd seen the craft leave, than about what my body was going to look like. So this led them to mention that they thought I was dead when they talked to the sheriff, which led to the suspicion that they had actually murdered me and were just
making up
a cover story.
Did they not all pass a polygraph test, which verified everything they all said?
Yeah, and some of them have taken more than one. At the time, the president of the American Polygraph Association said the odds were over 1,000,000 to 1 when you have that many people, six people passing tests on a single issue. And as of now, there's 16 passed tests. I've passed 5 different tests from people, all 3 examiners, with many years of law enforcement experience.
Travis, I've known you for 11 years. I've run into you at events and conferences. I know you as an impeccable guy, a no-nonsense person. You've been on Coast to Coast with us for years. I believe that you're the real deal, and whatever happened to you, in the way you describe it and the way your colleagues have described it, is absolutely the way it happened. It is absolutely, to me, one of the most incredible stories I've ever heard. And I think you're right now. As you look back, I think they're trying to save your life rather than abduct you and probe you and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I think. And there's other circumstances that point in that direction. The way I was returned to where I could get to safety, and just a number of circumstances.
As you think back, did you have nightmares about them? Or did you just move on with your life over the years?
Oh, I had some really terrible nightmares for quite a while afterwards. It was very difficult to deal with. You know, every waking moment was practically a nightmare, you know. I was coping with these extremely terrifying memories and at the same time dealing with all kinds of, you know, attacks on my character. And I'm sure the other crewmen, you know, didn't find any of that very pleasant either because, you know, they were undergoing the same kinds of attacks.
That's true. And how long did that continue, those attacks on you, your personality, who you were?
Well, you know, it never really went away. But, you know, things that were dispelled a long time ago, because, you know, I wrote it all down in a book. I took every charge and met them head on with documented facts that undermine all of these theories. But to this day, there are skeptics who maintain websites using things that were discredited a long time ago. And it's these are more propaganda sites because when I try to post, they won't let me because, you know, I will point to the evidence. You know, there's a theory that it was all a drug hallucination, that I was hallucinating on drugs. But I had blood and urine samples put through the county medical examiner's drug screen, which proved there were no drugs in my body. And that was on several of my polygraph tests. But because that helps to discredit it, that's what they're going to keep saying.
Have you remained friends with the loggers? Are they all alive? What's the latest there?
Well, you know, I lost touch with many of them for many years at a time, but a couple of them have died. Alan Dallas had a heart attack December before last. He was just driving, pulled up to a stoplight, had a heart attack, and
God.
They got the paramedics out there and were unable to revive him. And then I just recently found out another crew member, Dwayne Smith, also had a heart attack just about 11 months ago.
And he passed on too then?
Yes.
Your best friend, of course, Mike Rogers. Did you stay in touch with Mike or have you faded away there too?
Yeah, I'm falling out with him, you know, and he just wants to get on with his tree service and just would rather not talk about it anymore. But I think Ken and John and Steve will probably attend the conference.
Yeah, you've got one coming up. When is that? The Summit Conference, right?
Yeah, November 5th is when it starts. The main conference is the 7th, 8th, and 9th. Now, on the 5th, that's the actual anniversary of the event. And it actually falls on a Wednesday this year.
That's right.
Just like it did originally. However, that early Skywatch is completely sold out. As a matter of fact, we, by mistake, got way overbooked on that one, according to what we had planned. But
overbooked is always good, Travis. Believe me.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, there'll be a second Skywatch that we've still got some room in on the 8th. That'd be the
okay,
Saturday.
Great. Stay with us. Travis Walton, our special guest. I'm going to talk more with him about what could be out there after what he went through, his thoughts about extraterrestrial life. Travis Walton, our guest. And then in our final hour with him, we'll take phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Travis Walton with us. Travis's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's travis-walton.com. You got to put that dash between his name. And there's full information about his Arizona event. If you want to go and really see an incredible event, that's where he'll be at talking about this episode. Travis, hard to believe it's been 39 years since this happened. It's amazing.
Yeah, it seems like yesterday in a way.
Do you wish it had never happened to you?
Yeah, I do. I really still, you know. Things have gotten so much better, you know, as far as, you know, locally, the way people react to me, but I'd still rather it never happened, you know. I'd like to have my old life back, but, you know, I'm stuck with it, so I just got to, you know, over the years, I've come to realize that along with the burden, there comes a great responsibility to try to, you know, make some good come of this for people. So, you know, to try to educate the public is, you know, a place to start.
And you were only 22 years old when this happened. You were a young man. It just changed your entire life.
Yeah, it just derailed everything. But you just got to pick up the pieces and go with what life deals you.
What did your family members say to you after this case?
Well, you know, they were very supportive. And, you know, the people who knew me best were the ones that were the most supportive. The most negative stuff came from people who really didn't even have even the basic facts of the incident.
Did you ever have anybody come up to you that you might have known who said, you know what, Travis, in the beginning, I didn't believe any of this. I got to tell you, I was wrong. I'm sorry. My God, this happened to you. Did that ever happen?
Well, more and more lately, it's amazing how many people, local people, town folk, are coming up and saying things just about like that. That they always did believe me, but they were kind of afraid to speak up about it. But they don't mind shaking my hand in public and saying that, you know. So things have really turned around.
Did you end up staying in Arizona, or did you move out of state?
Well, I was tempted to run away, but I'm actually the only crew member who still lives in Snowflake, Arizona.
You're kidding. Yeah, they all left then. That's something. What do you think, because this is going to be a broader question for you, what do you think is going on with this ET visitation, with what happened to you, with what happened on the Barney and Betty Hill case, and what apparently might be happening to millions of people worldwide? What do you think is going on?
I've had a lot of years to think about it, George, and it really has kind of, I've developed a theory. You know, it is just my theory, but, you know, the skeptics are fond of saying, well, if they were really here, they would land on the White House lawn and make themselves widely known. But what nobody ever looks at is the other end of the spectrum. You know, Michio Kaku was a physicist that was on television recently saying people keep imagining other civilizations to be maybe 100 or 200 years ahead of us. But, you know, based on the age of these star systems, they could be hundreds of thousands or millions of years ahead of us.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, as Arthur C. Clarke is famous for being quoted, a sufficiently advanced technology would be indistinguishable from magic to us. So, you know, the other end of the spectrum for me is that they could maintain and do every single thing that they're doing here on this earth and remain completely undetected. And why do they do neither? Why are they? I mean, there would be no ufology. There would be no mystery about this at all. And they could be here just and do everything that they're doing. Now, why is it neither one? And my theory is that this sort of partial glimpsing, peekaboo, sort of hide-and-seek kind of thing where we have all these cases that are just filtering up kind of from the grassroots level, but nothing so overtly provable that it creates the kind of shock. It might sound a little bit trite or science fictionish, but I think there probably is something like a prime directive, a non-interference directive that they realize that to make open contact with us would be devastating. You know, most people wouldn't even go to work the next day. So it would be profoundly disrupting to many basic Earth institutions. So I think that what's going on is actually a kind of a gradual conditioning process.
I think it's happening both ways, too. This is what's so remarkable. You're absolutely right. I think if they just came out right now or years ago when this all started, people would break down religions. They'd break down government leadership. Everything would fall apart. I think what's happening at the Vatican level now, with them leaking stories about extraterrestrial life, that, you know, we don't think it negates a belief in God, joking that I would baptize them. I think what the Vatican is starting to do, Travis, is get us prepared for the moment that they decide, the ETs, to come forward so we don't panic anymore.
Yeah, I think that's true, you know, and, you know, it's great that the Vatican is coming around publicly, but, you know, my son was going with a girl, and her priest called this guy in that was telling people that, telling her, called her aside and told her she should break up with him because his dad was consorting with demons or something. And so I guess who has the last laugh there, although she did break up with him because on that did. Kind of advice.
Was that the priest, though, that gave her the advice?
No, well, no, it was a guy that came and gave a talk to the congregation at the priest's request.
Jeez. Well, those things happen. Do you think the ETs or whatever these beings were that helped you, basically got you back to life again, were they robots or do you think they were real physical, you know, creatures?
You know, I've got that question before, George, about were they robots? But I believe that if you had a sufficiently advanced technology that you could create a being that could act in the place of a living being, that it would be undetectable if that was their desire. I mean, our technology is approaching that to where you see some very realistic animatronics. So, I don't think I would have been able to tell, but my own impression is that this was an organic creature. Without a doubt, you know.
Do you remember, at least in the beginning, before they zapped you out, any propulsion system or anything? I mean, they obviously aren't coming here conventionally the way we travel. They've learned how to bend space and time. But do you recall anything like that at the craft level or inside?
No, I didn't find my way into those areas, but it was certainly nothing like what you see in science fiction, or even in the movie Fire in the Sky, in which the interior of the craft was depicted as very cluttered and organic looking, when actually it was very sterile, very mechanical, and actually kind of featureless, devoid of any kind of. There wasn't even writing anywhere that I could see. You know, people have suggested that maybe they could see in ultraviolet or infrared, and there may have been things there that were invisible to me, but I didn't even see any writing.
It wasn't very big. They say it was like 8 feet tall by 20 feet in diameter. I think it might have been a craft that came from a mothership that was circling the planet.
Or even a probe. You know, we don't really know for certain what craft took me aboard. But it was definitely very claustrophobic in there, very dimly lit, humid, and part of the claustrophobia came from the feeling of suffocation. And, you know, I elaborated quite a bit on why that feeling of suffocation triggered so much hysteria and panic. You know, there's people who say, well, you know, I would have just kept a cool head and, you know, ask good questions and grab the souvenir. But, the feeling of suffocation is a fear you just can't reason away. And that's the underlying theory behind waterboarding. Our people actually train for it. They know it's harmless, but it works. It works because you can't reason away the feeling of total hysteria that, fear, overpowering fear that the feeling of suffocation gives you.
No, that's true. I would guess it's all speculation, Travis, but any idea what system they were coming from?
Well, that would be speculation, you know. I don't know. They didn't say. And as far as other reports, I think that they're probably intelligent life coming here from a variety of different planets. And, you know, look how far we've come in 100 years. 100 years ago, there wasn't an airplane, there wasn't a radio, let alone a cell phone. And you know, give them 100,000 years, and who's to say that they even progress at the same rate? They may have the ability to progress at a much more rapid rate. But even by comparison, this last year, NASA came out and said there's a virtual certainty that every star has about a dozen planets going around it. And that's a long ways from back when they had this thing called the Drake equation, which was supposed to estimate the number of, intelligent civilizations in the galaxy. And that those numbers are far, way too low from what we know now.
Well, and so, Frank Drake is the reason why SETI is looking for extraterrestrials.
How ironic. But some of these beings, having been spacefaring for, eons, may have actually colonized other planets, and a single species could be from more than one planet. But I do believe that there are, a variety of different races or beings, types of beings, coming from a variety of different planets.
Our dear friend Tracy Torme wrote your film, Fire in the Sky. What kind of a job do you think he did compared to the book? Because it's tough with Hollywood.
Yeah, he was not in favor of the fictionalizations that came into it later in the process. But he will be speaking at my conference as one of my featured speakers.
Excellent. He's a good guy.
Yes.
He is a good guy, and you know him. And, I think he's very credible about what he does. I remember years ago when you were on Larry King Live, when he was on CNN, you debated Philip Klass, the skeptic. And didn't he, I can't repeat it on the radio, Travis, but didn't he go ballistic and screaming and yelling?
Profanity on live television. He made himself look very bad. But, on that show, he was it displayed the typical traits of the typical skeptic. He was saying that this energy beam that hit me, should have caught me on fire and caught the woods on fire because there was a thick carpet of pine needles. But almost in the same breath, he's saying that when I hit the ground, I should have been bruised because the ground was rocky. So was it rocky or was it covered with a thick carpet of pine needles? That was just typical of his argument throughout all of these tirades against me over the years. It didn't matter if one argument was consistent with another of his. It's just anything he could throw at me to see if it'd stick, and none of it did.
No. Philip, of course, he's no longer with us. He died in 2005. And, I have nothing against skeptics. I think it's healthy to question and critique, but, he just was not a believer in anything, was he?
Well, there's legitimate skepticism where you actually are making an inquiry, but when you begin with a conclusion, that's not skepticism, that's propaganda.
It sure has. What has happened to the UFO community these days, Travis? I mean, I remember the days when we had Bud Hopkins and Dr. John Mack and all those folks. Many are dying away. It's changing, isn't it?
There's still a few, there are complaints about how, ufology is going to the dogs, so to speak. We need to, quote, drain the swamp. And I don't know, I think rather than trying to exclude this, what's called the lunatic fringe, I think they are the ones that need to be brought in, that there is a... What I've tried to do is sort of raise the bar,
Yes.
I've never come forward. There are things that I could tell you that I don't come out with because until I can prove it, I'm not going to report it. So,
I've never seen you lose your temper. I've seen you cool and collected. You've been a gentleman wherever you've been. And thank God the people I've witnessed around you have treated you as such as well, but you don't lose your cool.
Well, it doesn't help.
No, Not at all. Look,
I certainly had my patience tried at times with.
Well, I can understand that. Well, when you were younger, 22 years old, and this happened to you, were you particularly spiritual at that time?
I would say yes, spiritual, you know, religious, maybe not. You know, I wasn't a church regular, but, you know, I think this experience made me even more spiritual in the sense of being attuned to that there's a greater power, greater powers, and a higher level of understanding if you can tune into it. And I actually do adhere to the idea that there are alternative ways of knowing, but there's only one way for me to tell you about it, and that's what I can document. Because in the absence of that, anybody can say anything and just, you know, claim it's from their personal new way of knowing. You know, where's that going to get you? I'm sure the terrorists can tell you that their beliefs are just the only truth in the world.
Yeah. If they came back today, Travis, what one question would you ask them?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And there is one question I'd begin with, and that's why?
Why you?
Yeah, why me, and why a whole lot of things that came after that. There's some interesting things that I wonder about, like the phenomenal tree growth of the trees that were nearest where the craft came down. And, you know, we've done a follow-up expedition to the site here in recent months that revealed some pretty exciting new information.
Does it look the same to you, the area?
No, there's been a forest fire since then, and it came through there and killed a lot of the trees. Although, you know, the trees the nearest where the craft were did seem to survive a little better. They actually eventually died too. But this kind of freed up the research a little bit, because back when the original core samples were being taken,
yeah,
it was, you know, Mike took the samples, and he was extremely careful to make sure that he didn't damage the health of the tree. And he was quite successful. Those trees grew and flourished right up until the time of the fire. But, you know, he took the sample and then sealed the wound back to where no insects could get in there and whatnot. But now that the fire has killed the trees, we're able to get a full cross-section, and that's where this exciting new information came in. The thickened tree rings, you know, is absolute proof of accelerated growth. But the skeptic said, well, lots of things could cause this growth. But what we discovered with a full cross-section is that depending on their position relative to where the craft came down in the clearing, the thickened rings are towards the direction where the craft came from.
That's interesting. Travis, hold that thought. We're going to come back and take some calls with you in our final hour on Coast to Coast AM.